gentlemen. My name is George Snowden. I'm Director of Human Resources for the Boston University Medical Campus. I'm a Boston University employee. I am joined by Boris Lashik. Boris is a human resources consultant in our office here at the medical campus, and we have prepared a presentation for you this afternoon on hiring and managing personnel. A preface to it is, again, we're Boston University. We're going to talk about Boston University's policies and procedures. We do appreciate that many of you straddle the two institutions here on the medical campus, both BMC and BU. So I would direct you to BMC and Tim Manning and his staff for questions regarding HR policies and practices under the medical center. But again, we will address hiring individuals for Boston University and our policies and practices. We've got a small group, so we'll encourage questions and interactive. Boris has made copies of the PowerPoint presentation that we'll share with you afterwards. But clearly, we encourage your questions both throughout the presentation and afterwards. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to Boris, and we'll run you through.
Hi, everybody. Well, just like George said, questions are always good. I mean, we do have this presentation, but most importantly is if you have any questions, we'll answer it right here. You will notice that when you get your handouts that I did a little bit more than just bullet points. I included some more substance to it, so when you get home, you have it in front of you. Again, the topic is hiring and managing personnel, and objectively, clearly, that's not something that we can spend 1 hour talking about and then expect that, now you will know what to do next. But it gives you sort of a general idea of some of the things that are important when it comes to hiring and managing. And our presentation really focuses on these early stages. What can you possibly do to minimize the risk of hiring a poor performer? What are some of the things you can do before they even join your lab or your department? And again, it's not a science. I wish there's a formula that we plug in the numbers and we get the results. And sometimes, and some people have exceptional interviewing skills. And they present well, and you say, oh my God, this is a perfect employee. And then a few weeks later, she's hired, and then issues start arising. So again, think of this as a tool, things you can do to minimize some of that risk and take control and reduce that chance element. So I'm going to start with the first statement that I always have to remind myself and everyone in HR needs to have this, is who's our top candidate? Who are we going to hire? This is really a statement that should apply, and you should use this when you hire. It's basically, we've hired top candidates as a result of their qualifications, their abilities, their skills, and knowledge critical to performing the essential functions and responsibilities of the position. So again, just a general statement, but it really is, kind of nicely summarizes it for HR and hiring managers. What is it that you're looking for? And if you stick to this, you will be fine. Avoid a lot of issues of fun. So, basically, I think the most important thing to do is once you decide that I'm going to post this position, I need to hire someone in this that role, is to ask yourself questions about the skills, competencies, experience that ideal candidate would have. And the best guide is to utilize that job description if you have one in place. Maybe you're not going to have that job description. Maybe this is a good opportunity for you to think about, and you're doing two things at the same time. You're preparing yourself for that interview, but you also might now draft your first job description. And I'm going to say this because, again, this is just 1 hour presentation. Working with human resources in any of these stages, it's critical. You can call us with any questions, anything related and having to do with hiring and recruitment, and later, hopefully not, employee relations. So again, these are some of the questions where you say, ask yourself, what skills and how will that candidate contribute? I'm going to go into more specifics in the next slide here. This is what I would do if I were a hiring manager. I first want to learn a little bit by myself. And how is that individual going to work with me? And so you make it probably a good way is to make a list of some of the things here that you should kind of some sort of self-assessment. Are you a hands-on manager, someone who really prefers written communication, emails, someone who's expecting their employee to basically let you know what's happening maybe every day? Or are you someone who says, listen, you're a professional employee, you're hired for such and such reason, and I expect you to do your job, and I just need to know that the job's done. Obviously, knowing that up front will help you look for these traits and that candidate that you're interviewing. We have employees, and I don't judge you disagree, where they've worked for a Department A, and we heard from the department there are a number of issues or concerns, and then they may be transferred somewhere else, and suddenly they become this exceptional employee, or vice versa. Exceptional employee goes to a different department, and then there are issues. And again, I don't think much has changed with that candidate, but is that the personality, their style, is that a good match with your style? I think that's critical, yes.
Do you mind if we interrupt you as you go
along? Absolutely. Go ahead. Yes.
So is there some kind of instrument that is not proprietary that one can download to do a person, you know, essentially as an assessment of what kind of manager you are?
There are many self-assessments. I've seen some online. We don't have any. And when I go back to my office, I can find one and then send everyone. I can send you that email and that link. There are online assessment tools where you can do some sort of self-assessment in the managers. I've seen those.
If there's like a tool that you can give us for people to really kind of go through and do a checklist. I know when we went through a recent hire, Diane and I did one that was proprietary, but anyhow, I actually found it quite helpful to understanding, and it helped me avoid making a disconnect match.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, I'll find something and I'll send it to you, Peter, and then you can just send it. I think a lot of times it's important that we hear, and George and I are both employee relations, and so we often hear that, you know, I'm perfectly happy with this employee. You know, they do A, B, and C, but I have some genuine concerns when they go out there and communicate to other departments, my students, my clients, whoever that is. I'm perfectly fine, but there seem to be issues. So again, is your working style similar to that of a supervisor, or maybe even your clients, or so, whoever is that constituent that you're working with? And finally, most importantly, obviously this goes to teamwork, is your style different from the managers, and also are they expected to work with the other managers? And I didn't put in here, but think of your sort of a general dynamic in your office and your department. Will this person fit with the rest of your staff? The next thing in sort of a self-assessment a little bit is knowing your department's culture. And as you go through this, it'll be so much easier when you write this down and you have a list. It'll be so much easier to ask targeted specific questions when you have that interview. Here's a good example. Do you expect employees to be at work at a specific time, or do you prefer that? You know, that's a question that can be somewhat rephrased and reformulated, and you can ask the question of that candidate. And to be bluntly honest, a lot of times we hire employees, and if they work in a lab animal science center, clearly labs are open 24/7, weekends, nights. That's something they need to be told up front. And maybe that candidate will, due to family circumstances, withdraw the candidacy and say, listen, now that I know this, I am no longer interested, or I'm interested in something Monday to Friday. So it gives you, again, you eliminate, you reduce the chance of hiring someone and things are not going to work out. I wouldn't think that there will be, I mean, in your case, you're probably hiring mostly in various labs, and I don't think you have formal attire, but some of you might. So again, that's a question that you ask yourself, and then you have that individual come to their first interview dressed in their jacket, no suit, and whatever the expectation is, well, that exactly is the sign that maybe this is not a right candidate, right there. This again, you can have someone who's very timid, not very self-assertive in the interview, someone who's got the right answer, someone who looks right, who gives you the right answer, but again, you can see that they're not out aggressive and out there, and maybe that's exactly what you need. If your environment is that fostering that kind of competition, and you expect your employees to compete. And here's my favorite. Ask yourself, because I would imagine sometimes there'll be a new position, but most of the time you're replacing someone. And ask yourself, why did that person leave? Or maybe the person before that. Why? Or why did people your staff was staying there and stayed there for a long time, why did they stay? This is probably the most important question you'll ask yourself. Because if you know what the reasons are, then you can, again, influence the outcome of that hiring decision. Critical. Know your expectations of the job. George and I keep saying this every day. If it's not in a job description, and they don't know about it, you cannot expect anyone to perform and deliver and live up to our expectations, what is that they're supposed to do. Job description should be always in front of us. We should be thinking about a job description. And so before you even have someone call in for an interview, estimate what is the most important percentage-wise, you know, divide it into percentages. What's the most important part of that job? Rank the skills and duties. And because clearly we're not gonna find a perfect, if you're lucky, maybe you are, but most of us are not gonna find a perfect candidate that will have an exhibit and have to possess all the skills and trades and personality trait. But you have to focus on what is really critical to my day-to-day and what's nice to have. And again, once you interview, you sit down, you evaluate that, and that's your framework. These are your parameters here. And if a person has majority of must have, well, good. Nice to have, even better. But if it's the other way around, clearly you're not going to proceed to the second interview. So I think this is very, very important. Any questions so far? Know your expectations of the person. And again, this goes a little bit, I talked about management and how they get along with managers of this style. But I think it's important to have, and I don't know about you, George, but I know that a lot of hiring managers make these decisions alone. They don't include the staff, but it's always good to include staff. Not necessarily, you don't have to, I mean, the decision's yours who you're gonna hire. But feedback that they will provide and input is always welcome, whether it's positive or negative. And it doesn't matter what position you're hiring for. I think the chemistry is important. And I think it's always good to have someone who maybe occupies a similar position, shares responsibility, someone who knows that job. I think in my office, when we interviewed, we actually just, the most recent hire we did is our employment specialist. And we had our compensation analyst, first George interviewed, being a director of HR, then we had our compensation analyst who inevitably will be talking to employment every day. And we had another employment specialist interview, which was kind of a group interview. He doesn't have the first interview, maybe you as a manager need to have the first one, but if you decide to bring him back, this is very important. Someone will notice something, and someone in that group will point out that something, and someone will look at it from a different perspective, give you a different view and look at, and it's critical. And you know, I think what we had, it was real success. I think we identified, you know, kind of, it's funny when a person leaves and then group kind of sort of debriefing, we talk about what are your impressions. It's interesting how we find some commonalities, but also how I learned from someone else who interviewed. I didn't notice that makes sense. So I think that's absolutely critical. No two jobs are the same. And sometimes there are things, there should be in the job description of what is important for you
why is it important you fill that role? But think of weaknesses in your current team. You know, you might have two administrative assistants that occupy a similar position. If you compare the job descriptions, they're pretty much the same. But maybe one will be working with the dean's office, for example. And now you need to have someone who might be, I don't know what would be specific to dean's office, so someone who will be who have a great exposure maybe to faculty, or someone who needs to really present well, someone who will be out there the face of that department. So think of the weaknesses, current weaknesses you have in your what you're lacking. And you know, as they say, you are as strong as your weakest link. And think of weaknesses and then look if you can find someone to fill that gap. What can we learn from an interview? A number of things. And you know, I talked about the first bullet, creativity. It really is a perfect example, and I'll talk about it specific interview questions later. But you should never ask questions where they can answer with yes or no. Let them sweat. And that's exactly why, because you want to see how creative they are. How well are they going to make that connection between the educational background, their experience, and your position, and why should you hire that person? They should be able to say that. I have a question, why should I hire you? But an ideal candidate will tell you that. You should, if you ask the question, why should I hire you? I think they failed a little bit in communicating that to you up at that point. That's exactly what the interview is. We have many, many candidates. They all meet the requirements. They all have pretty much similar education and work history, some more, some less. But why should I hire you? And that's exactly the point. And you see that desire for the job. Well, was the person late? The person, when we interviewed for, the manager interviewed for custodian position, you know, they say, I've heard folks say, they don't have to dress up for the interview. Well, they do, and it's not because they'll be walking around in a suit as a custodian, but it shows the desire to get that job, it shows the motivation. And I'm not going to go through every slide, but the ability to handle an interview. A lot of times, we all get busy, and maybe we schedule an interview at 2 p.m., something comes up, and now we shorten that interview to 15 minutes. Don't do that. Reschedule it. You really should be able to sit down and don't let them go home until you've got a very good understanding of who's sitting in front of you and how strong that candidate is. And so here's the interview process. I'm going to start with the first thing. It's always good to have and highly recommendable that you have or develop some sort of evaluation form. I can also send you some, Peter, if you guys want to look at it and modify it. There's no generic evaluation form. What I'll send you is just an example. But you should use this because it will help you. It will prevent all kinds of legal issues, liability issues, in what we ask, we don't ask. We should, consistency is the key word. We should be asking pretty much the same questions. Clearly, we can rephrase the question a little bit, but substantively, we should ask the same question of every single candidate we bring in for that interview. Number one, again, helps us avoid any kinds of claims that, questions being asked of one, not of the other. But most importantly, it really, you're not going to be comparing apples and oranges. You're comparing the answers that you have for everyone. And so that evaluation form is always good to have. And a lot of times it's quantitative or qualitative. I'm on an interviewing panel for the needle. We have group of four interviewers for public safety officers for the needle. And it's both quantitative and qualitative in a sense that it's listing some of the important traits, and it says 1 to 5, and you rate it but also it's got a little note section where I can write down just kind of general impression that I get, and that's important to have. I talked about a team approach. Again, 2 to 3 people interview each candidate, if possible. Again, have a coworker or someone in a similar job, because each person is looking for different things. And here's that connection. And I used to teach workshops, and it was to work for nonprofit agencies that we would have the what we call clients, but unemployed come to us, and we teach them interviewing skills and help them find jobs and make that connection. And I always said, and that this is sort of a well-known concept, is that you should really be able to make the connection between what you possess in terms of skills and experience to that particular job. Give the applicant a copy of the job description. I'm always surprised that there's a number of managers actually who not only never speak about the job description in the interview process, but employees who start the job, they begin there, and a few weeks later I get a request from them to say, can I get a copy of my job description? Clearly, I mean, this is a disaster waiting to happen. You look at a job description, there's nothing secretive about it. You can clearly show them the job descriptions and go over it. Clearly, kind of define expectations, and you can review a component. And this is why we're doing that. Do they understand the job requirements? And you will suddenly get, a lot of times, if you have 5, 10 candidates, and you've done this, they go home. I would be surprised, remember me when I said this today, we get an email from 1 or 2, thank you, without thank you. And there you go. They just self-validate, just based on that. Because their expectation was, HR consultant means one thing at BU, and HR consultant means a different thing at IBM. So that's critical. The second thing is that if you go over the job description, it also makes you understand if they have the know-how, if they have the skills, and what it takes to do this job. And this is my favorite part. This is the why should I hire you? This is it. Why is how well they match their own skills. I can read for myself. I can see a resume. I understand you have a bachelor's, you have a master's. I understand 10 years. Fine. So do 10 other candidates I'm interviewing. How well do you match your skills to this job description? After you review the job description, you want to hear from them. Jump and say, yeah, that's exactly what, this is how I did it, and this is, now that they have better understanding of that. Any questions so far? Education and training. Obviously, anything pertaining to education and training is that, how are they going to use their education on the job? Clearly, what initiative they have taken in the past? Do they have additional courses? Have they, you know, my folks who graduated from, got their bachelor's, and then have a list of certificates and other things, clearly shows initiative. Clearly, this is someone who's not sitting at home. Are they looking for a job? This is someone who's trying to improve their skills and education, and that's valuable. What plans they have for continuing to maintain or improve their education? You might actually have, you know, back of your mind say, geez, if I find this administrative assistant, I've been thinking, I always wanted to do this, I never had a right candidate, but if I had a right candidate, I was thinking about sending that candidate to get certification and do D and E and F and G. Now, if you have someone sitting in front of you who say, oh yeah, give me more, I want this, if their resume screams, I invest in my education, that might be the right candidate. That might be that. Well, it's not on the job description, but it's 2 years from now. How well they can foresee future needs to maintain or upgrade their own skills, both on the job and outside. and clearly what motivates the applicant to take on the extra training. Now, George, you wanted to talk a little bit about, because we provide the tuition admission, and that's also important too.
As many of you know, the university has a very attractive benefits program, and one of the most attractive features to our benefits program is the ability for employees to take courses here at the university. And it's a major factor in attracting individuals to the university, and it's also a retention factor, particularly as people grow and have families and they want their children to possibly go to the university. One point I always like to make around the tuition remission benefit is it's been my experience sometimes that people often come to the university to work to really get the degree, and the priorities get reordered. And I think it's incumbent upon managers to often make sure that that does not go awry in the employment relationship. The form that employees fill out, it's online now, but to apply for tuition remission has a specific statement in it asking whether or not the courses takes place during the day, and if so, you need to get your supervisor's approval in order to get out of work and go to those classes. And oftentimes that's problematic because they may be taking classes over at Charles River and getting across town at midday and getting back. It can be very disruptive and damage the working relationship and them getting the job done. So my point is I think it's always important in working with new employees to make sure that the priorities are correct and that they're hired here to do a job and that you'll work with them to help them facilitate their career and their further education. But don't let the priorities get out of whack such that the tuition remission and taking classes becomes the priority, and then the job becomes secondary. And unfortunately, we see this happen sometimes, so I always like to make mention of it, just as you're working with candidates and with hiring managers, that make sure we get the dynamic straight.
And again, this might even help you a little bit in pre-screening of someone who's going to say, make a statement. You'd be surprised what people say. Sometimes they're very honest. And they say, you know, what do you see, you know, yourself 5 years from now? Oh, I'm going to get a master's degree in the School of Public Health, and I'm interested in working for the City of Boston's urban development, something. You know, you don't see yourself 5 years. If they tie that in this position and role that you're recruiting for, that's different. But again, this can be used to eliminate some of that. Decision-making and creativity. I'd say when you interview, and I'll show you, there's a slide where there are thousands and thousands of interview questions. I've included the ones that I think are very good questions, and you can use those. But they're open-ended questions, and I'll show you in a couple of slides. But it's also good to mix the open-ended questions with the scenario questions. And basically, the technique is that you give them a situation, give them something, obviously without disclosing the names or specifics of it, but sort of a general situation, and describe the people involved, the circumstances, and then you say, what would you do? How would you handle this? I mean, this is as close as to get to the real life situation when they hire. Well, how would you do that? And that is, again, there's no hiding. If you're asking their questions, there's no hiding. They can't hide, and if they try to do it clearly, that tells you that maybe they're not the right candidate. But it really is a perfect example of how you can learn a lot more about that. You understand the thinking process. You understand how they communicate, how they think creatively, and also you'll see how well they communicate to you, and you gotta see how many questions they ask and what kind of questions they ask to clarify that. So I did two slides when it comes to interview questions, and I did it in a little bit in a different way. The first slide you're looking at is I identify the goals. So you can do two things. You can come up with your own questions, but this is what's behind the question. This is what you want to find out. However you want to phrase this question, this is what you're after. The next slide is the actual questions, but this is what you're after. However you want to design your question, this is what you're after. Obviously, you're going to look at the responsibilities of each job, how we all know that. What was most rewarding about each position? My favorite question is, tell me about the favorite job. Why did you like that job? Why was it your favorite? And the one that you didn't like, or disliked, and why? And then I learned a lot from that. obviously responsibility, how the teamwork, initiative, scenarios. I talked about how they handle problems and challenges, what motivates them to take that position, how they got along, and how they interacted with whether it's students, coworkers, clients, advisors, and whatnot. And so here's the next thing is that the cultural fit. It's always impressive, and it always gives you, I always feel very good about candidates who come in and they've done their homework. They come in here and they say, they throw in a little, is it true that Charles River can, something that they wouldn't know otherwise. They've decided they won't go online, they read about the NEU or Boston University or the medical campus, and obviously they get time to do that. That obviously is always how well would they fit into your department? And what initiative did they take in preparing for the Do you have any questions? No. Well, that's obviously something that I wouldn't necessarily proceed if they had no questions. Or questions that are, what kind of benefits do you have? Or how much vacation do I vacation time do I accrue? I mean, do you really want something? This is where they're supposed to be their best. You're not going to get, this is their best. They're not going to get better than that. And they're asking you about vacation accrual. So, and I say this because about another thing is that a lot of times when you hire recent college graduates, no offense to anyone, but they haven't been exposed to interviewing. And maybe it's just, they just felt that they had to ask something. Again, I don't want you to think that once they ask a question, they're gone, you're eliminated. But, look at their age, look at the prior experience. If they just graduated, maybe they don't know anything. Better questions than that. And here's a sample interview questions. This is what I feel free to use this when I give you a handout. This is exactly in that presentation. It's absolutely fine to ask any of these. These are okay questions. And there are a number of questions that are not just not okay, but illegal. But if you stick to these, I think there's enough questions here to really find out who you're going to hire. And again, combined with that scenario situation that I talked about earlier, it gives you a good idea. Open-ended. Give them an opportunity to speak and avoid yes and no. How do you define success? I mean, that's a 10-minute. They need 10 minutes to answer that. And here, I use that, why should I hire you? But again, it should be clear that they should answer the question before you ask it. Short-term goals, long-range objectives. Here's a great question. Greatest strengths and weaknesses. And you see how creative they are. More creative will say, my biggest weakness is that I'm a workaholic. I don't know, I just want to, I don't know how to slow down. It's creative, maybe it's true. But you see how, it's a tough question. And I assume that the audience would probably hire a lot of, maybe most recent college graduates. I added this question here, because they might not have prior work experience. So in this case, you can certainly modify, any of this can apply to the school. But you can use this. What would if I were to ask a professor, what would they say? For students, what were your favorite classes? I can't ask you what was your favorite job. What were your favorite classes and why? Are there any that you didn't like and why? And do you have any plans for further education? And again, I think this is more important to research type institution than we are than anyone else. Because a lab tech or research assistant might be really motivated to get this job because of the particular study, because that's where they see their career, cholesterol study, for example, or whatever it is, the study. This is why they came here, not they can go to Harvard or somewhere else. It's the study. It's not, I mean, research tech is a research tech or research assistant, research assistant, but it's the study. And so find out how much they know about it, because if they do, that's a good sign. Clearly, they're not just looking for a job, but they're looking for that particular job that you, or that particular study lab. So, any questions about, before I go to the second stage, which is, we made our decision, and that's, Peter, he wanted us to talk about these topics. What do we do? What are some of the early signs? How do we now, we hired someone, we thought they were the best candidate, and there are some issues, and what do I do, and how, what are some of the early signs of, and a lot of people still in HR call it the problem employee. I hate that term because it pretty much kind of defines the person, and that there's no problem employee. There's an employee with performance and behavioral issues. Nobody's a problem employee. But before we skip to that one, any questions about interviewing and I'll tell you this. You can call human resources any time. You can call me. I have my business card, and I'll disseminate it. Anytime. We can help you with interview questions. We can help you with interviewing. Usually human resources interview would be less specific. It would look for some, you know, punctuality, character, honesty, whereas obviously your interview would be more specific to that job. But we are, call us anytime, we can help with any of this.
Can you tell us where advertisements are typically placed?
Yeah, once position, if we talk about posted positions, mm-hmm. Positions posted through human resources. Number one, they're posted on our own internal open hire. And automatically, they're also posted on they used to be posted on Monster.com because we had a contract with them. But Monster.com merged with a new company. It's now
CareerBuilder.
No, it's idealist.org. And it's a sort of consortium of higher education institutions that post in these. That's automatically. If you are interested in posting it somewhere else, I have a contact me, and I have a list of about 20-something different, mostly online, job boards, but they cost, and I can discuss with you based on a position. If, for example, if you're looking for an IT person, clearly you want to go with Dice.com. That's the website that specializes in IT staff. For research staff, I would recommend a couple of publications that I have available. I can send you that information.
What about Craigslist?
You know, Craigslist, I will tell you this. Craigslist used to be, a couple years ago, it used to be a lot better. What is the advantages of Craigslist? That it's cheap. Disadvantage is that you will get flooded with resumes. Anything from car mechanics to truck drivers to applying for a research position. I mean, you'll get tons of resumes. Now, I will tell you that we had some very good resumes that were submitted through Craigslist. But recently it's gotten worse because I think it's got a bad reputation now because of the recent events that people are, because of the adult section, and a lot of people are staying away and don't think that employees will take anyone seriously if they did apply for Craigslist. But 2 years ago, we had some very good resumes. No cost.
And we still have hiring managers that request it, so we still use it, but we think it's kind of declined a bit.
It's declined a lot.
But we also have
BMC,
an agent.
I know that BMC does not allow advertising on Craigslist, and so I just think it's important sometimes to point out, you know, BU one way, BMC another way, you know, for people to
know. Is there a reason? Did they say why they wouldn't?
I think some of the reasons that you say, like, you're getting spammed
That's right. It's kind of Wild West.
Yes, you can't control it as much as a career builder site.
Absolutely, because all these sites, I mean, it's very simple. Craigslist, just you get emails to a pre-specified account that you specify, whereas all these other job boards have all kinds of tools you can use to pre-select. The software will sometimes pre-select, grade it for you, and a career builder is a good example. It's got an excellent tool to help you out with that. Any particular jobs that you'll be, a lot of idealist.org is a good example of a job board where you would post a lot of the development positions, the idealists of this world. It's a non-profit, it's relatively inexpensive. A lot of grant managers and development. But if you have a specific position in mind, send me an email and I'll give you my recommendation and what it costs.
And Diane, we also have an agency that we use if we want to go out to any of the journals or anything. They facilitate placement of ads there as well.
And I also, and you may be getting to this, but the affirmative action requirements, we should be thinking about A, in terms of where we advertise, and then B, in terms of filling out the forms and making sure that we're vetting the candidates appropriately.
Yeah, there are two pieces to that, but that's one of the reasons that if we do advertise with Craigslist or something like that, we'd like to have it come through our office so that we do get the required language, and oftentimes the department will say, oh, well, I'll just call Craigslist and do it myself, and then we don't get the appropriate action language. Mm-hmm. So you're quite right there. And then the applicant flow is what we do at the back end to just review the candidate pool.
Do you ever run into a job announcement that attracts too few resumes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that sometimes it's maybe taking a second look at a job description, because you might have, again, there's a pretty much clear understanding what director of HR functions are, unless you decide to make it something very unique and you post it under such, and you're not going to get a lot. Or you call it, maybe you have the job description that reads director of human resources, but you call it administrative manager. Folks out there are not used to that. They might not be looking for that kind of either title or job descriptions. So if you really make it a rather unique position, you want to look at, talk to compensation analyst. Michael Kerr is a compensation analyst in our office. He's a very nice guy. And he can help you out as you draft the job description so that that makes sense out there, folks. But yes, absolutely. And then once we rewrite the job description, we get better responses. But sometimes there are some positions that are just hard to recruit for. Dental ceramists. There are not a lot of them out there. Dental hygienists for other reasons.
What about targeting particular groups within BU? So, like, say, the School of Public Health or something like that. Is there a way, do you post to the school, or do you only put it up on sort of the external BU website?
We put it on external BU website. It's always, as long as you let us know, it's always okay. If you call it, just say, is it okay for us to put a little notice on the school's premises that there are positions, and you put the link where they can apply. As long as they go through that open hire that we have it posted, that's perfectly fine.
Well, so how would you go about doing that? So you'd be relatively in there, so you contact the, say, public health, whatever, and you speak with them about posting it there? Is that?
Yes. I think the schools have, well, one of the things to talk about, maybe career services first. Career services would be the appropriate office where they can say, yeah, there is a, within School of Medicine, there's a place and location where students go and they can look up the jobs. We've done that in the past.
You know, things that some hiring managers will do, sometimes they just make up a one sheet blurb if they know that they may have people in a particular department that might be interested in the job, and they just go place it on the bulletin board or something.
So you'd be interested in students or being Boston University employees transfer?
Students,
yeah. Career services are the best office to start with. And then you can always call HISA, help me out, summarize the job description. I don't want to miss something that's important. And the most important thing is to still have them go through our official website, which is online, where they're applying online. And that's, again, we go back to affirmative action. We want to make sure that we recruit communities and groups of people that need to recruit, not just one. Any other questions? I love questions. Questions are quick. Rather than going through slides, any questions? This presentation is not so much about procedural. We have that. I mean, if anyone's interested, we can have another one, but procedural, literally, sort of a bureaucratic PS1 you posted. This is where it goes. This is, you know, the job description. This is what it needs to have, accompanied by such and such document. We understood that this presentation was mostly about making the right decisions and about finding signs, early signs, of performance and behavioral issues. Yes.
Right. The administrators are the ones that you would work with on any procedural questions. But I do think that discussion here about the sites for advertising and that kind of thing was an important point to make, because you all may have non-traditional ideas about sites that would be better bets to getting, you know, certain research types or, you know, certain types of students that you're really looking for, those kind of things. And I do know that we have had people use Craigslist in the past, and it's a little controversial, so that's why I brought that up. But what I can do is see if the administrators would be interested in, you know, sort of the PS1, like a refresher on some of those things.
Absolutely.
And the affirmative action form is a form that's required once you've recruited someone. You need to fill it out, and administrators typically do that.
And just so you know, I happen to teach recruitment and hiring. Procedural, literally procedural, not on the soft skills, but here at BU you need this, this and that. And actually there's only two people signed up, and that's coming up. And if you go online, you know, HR training that we offer on our website, you can still sign up. There's about 8 slots that are available for students that you can attend that one. Yes.
Do you have a list of questions you're not allowed to ask? Because I've been surprised at some of the questions people tell me they've been asked. And
I'm like,
you're not allowed to ask that.
Yeah, I think I have a slide here, what questions not to ask. It's not a part of this presentation. I'll find the other one.
No, that's fine. If you can just give it to Peter.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, it's interesting.
Yes.
Many of us have never had any HR training.
Yes.
And no training in hiring, nothing. And people have different ideas about what's okay and not okay. And they just haven't really thought it through.
That's a very
good point. I'm not saying people are related, it's just, you know.
I sometimes
stuff around family, say, for instance, they're making conversation. Okay, what are your family plans? I mean, you know, they're making conversation, they're not trying to discriminate.
I've heard worse than that. I've apologized on behalf of the managers when the candidates told me what they asked them. I said, oh my God. Yeah, that's a good point. And I do have those, and those are the, but I can send that to it as well. Now, go back to that, when I say two things about advertising. What's important is that the most important thing, for the BU doesn't have a policy of don't post here, post there. We have recommendations. But the most important thing is that, well, if you are going to post something outside, let us know why. Because we want to have, we see that sometimes managers rewrite the job description, because, you know, a lot of times, a lot of the job boards follow a different verbiage, a different feel, you know, exciting and this and that. But if you want to rewrite a job description so that it's a different job from the one we actually posted. We've seen that happen. As long as if you copy and paste what's an open hire and you post it somewhere, it'll be fine. And two, as long as you let them know that the proper way of applying for that position is, and you provide them with a link to our to open hire, you'll be fine. Now, some of the early signs of performance issues, and this is George Snowden's, I guess, my expertise with our employee relations on the medical campus. So here's the, obviously, some of the issues, a number of the issues that we see more often. And when I say early signs, I talked to George earlier, it doesn't mean that early sign means that someone starts on Monday and they start exhibiting these 2 weeks into their employment. Early signs means signs that what you as a manager need to do doing something about it. We could be 2 years into the plant, and they start exhibiting these signs. But these are, again, the signs where you say, I need to speak to someone in human resources about this. I need to speak to George, of course, and how do I handle this? And you really, really don't want to just sit on it and do nothing about it, because it's not going to go away. I don't ever see it go away. To be honest with you, I don't know that it ever did. It doesn't go away. It just doesn't. So again, some of the stuff is very common sense. But if you have any questions, obviously the first sign is dishonesty. You know, whether it's dishonesty, the little white lines. Such and such, you approach an employee, and I heard this is kind of talking about experience. The manager called and said, Boris, I've asked such and such. I got a phone call from the PI who said that he has not received a submission for this grant or a copy of it. And I asked the employee, and she said, oh, I sent it. Well, that's an example of a white lie. And that's a sign, not that you're going to call HR right away, but it's a sign that let me pay attention. Let me pay attention a little to here. And obviously it becomes a pattern. If they get away with that little lie, anytime you approach them with something they haven't accomplished or completed, you're going to see that. Incompetence. I mean, clearly, I mentioned earlier, some people just interview exceptionally well. And they get the job, and they fall under unintentional, and they realize that that's a lot more than they expected, and that they don't have the skills that it takes, or it's intentional, clearly. They try to see what they can get away with. And usually you're going to see this early. I mean, very early into the fund, when they try to set the parameters for what's to come. Reluctance and resistance, that's a very common one, whether it's just, we all live in very dynamic, our jobs are dynamic, as you know, they change, what we do changes from week to week, and if someone is unwilling to accept that change or is resisting to it, clearly, negative conversations with other employees about the processes, about the department, about the managers, strained relationship with other employees, insensitive and disagreeable behavior. And by this I mean intentionally, not just the incompetence issues that I have in the previous slide, but I've asked Joe to send me this report by Tuesday, and I asked him again the following week, and I still have not received it. I got a phone call from, this is the second meeting that Joe missed because he always has some sort of emergency. Come up. So again, not meeting key performance areas is another one. Lack of dependability. Any of these. Failure to reach targets. Self-motivation. Unnecessary shift of duties to other employees. I've got employees who come to me and say, such and such comes to me and asks me to do this, or ask me to help out, or ask me to do it, and my manager's not doing anything about it. So it's really bad for morale, it's bad for the rest of your staff. Here's another one. Lack of dependability also means that if you start supervising so close, if you start spending your time on doing their job, you need to speak to somebody in human resources about how to address these issues. Because obviously, you just can't do that. Lack of compliance with timelines. I mean, I don't know what's okay. Is it okay to do it one time? Is it okay to do it two times? There's no, I don't have a recipe for that. But clearly, if there's a pattern that they fail to do that, do not wait. Do not wait. Attitude. Not engaged in the job, or doing the bare minimum, or below the minimum. Poor professional judgment. I'm not going to read every slide, but just, someone who's physically there, but obviously not engaged, mentally disruptive, job carelessness, submitted a grant and it's missing the signatures, it's got the wrong date on it. These are really all signs where you, maybe not in a, it could be a combination of these. It probably is going to be, I think you, George, you disagree, you're not going to see just one of them. You're going to see a number of issues combined. And that is then you say, oh, I think I need to talk to someone in HR to attend. Now, here's the attendance issue. Now, the first one, I have a question, because I have also, I have to say this. Is there an attendance problem? George and I get phone calls, and they say, oh, I want to talk to you about this employee. I want to get rid of this guy, and some attendance issues. He was out sick on Tuesday, and then 3 weeks ago, he was sick on Thursday again. Well, our policy states that our employees are entitled to sick time when they're sick. I mean, as long as they follow the procedures, some managers tend to make that an issue just because the study is important, the research is important, it has to be done. But let's not forget that we have to recognize the real pattern. Excessive absenteeism, arriving late, no reason provided, or no legitimate reasons. Last week I had someone who said his car broke down. The manager called me and said his car broke down. So he didn't show up on Friday. He didn't show up on Monday and Tuesday because he didn't have a car to come to work. Well, sorry, but that's something that I would qualify as a no legitimate reason for the absences. See, the folks are rushing in. Healthy practices. Active communication. Make sure they know expectations. Tell them when they're doing well or poorly. Let's not be surprised. There should be no surprises when you approach your employee about the issues. And that's why I say early on, early signs, you act upon, provide ongoing feedback, not just the performance evaluation that happens once a year, but it doesn't have to be anything formal, but let them know how they're doing. If there are issues, and act consistently, follow your own policy, do not make any exceptions unless you really have to. And I say this, and I'm careful, you cannot not have make exceptions in life. But realize that once you do, you're going to have to do it for what you do for person A, you're going to have to do for everyone else. And so that pretty much is, I'll see if there's anything. Any questions? I know it's just 1 hour, but we can talk about it for hours and try to rush through it. But any questions that are pressing, I'm going to disseminate these.